I'm Elaine Shannon.
I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast where we inspire and empower you to connect more soulfully to yourself.
In this episode of Soul Sister Conversations, we speak with Kathy Caulfield, who is on a mission to inform women about the importance of knowing their breast density. As someone who is cancer-free now, she also shares her story of breast cancer and how that impacted her. You will be inspired by her perspective, philosophy, and hope for the future. Well, Dana, we have a great and timely guest in the studio today, and I'm going to get right into her bio.
Perfect.
So Kathy Caulfield is an award-winning political reporter, columnist, and news editor who now works as a communications consultant and a freelance writer. After a bout with breast cancer in 2015-16, she's been on a mission to inform women about the importance of knowing their breast density. Her hashtag TellMe campaign during the 2018 New Brunswick election resulted in commitments to breast density notification in New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island. She currently lives in Quispamsis with her husband, two daughters, and their beagle. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you for having
me. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, this is a time, and it really is timely that we are having this conversation, and it'll be aired in October, because what is happening in October?
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and usually the Run for the Cure is in October as well.
I think it's October 6th this year, it's usually that first weekend in October.
And we'll verify that and put it on our Facebook.
Yeah. Yes. But why does October breast awareness matter to you?
Well, as you mentioned, I've been through it. I've had breast cancer, yes.
Yeah, breast cancer. Do you call yourself a breast cancer survivor or thriver or...
I'm glad you asked that, because I don't really embrace the survivor term.
Right.
And I don't know why, and it's funny, I was on a run yesterday, and I was thinking about talking with you guys today, and I thought, I don't really like that title, and I think it's because it's almost like it's a daring cancer to come back.
Mm. A little bit. So like, you're like wrestling with it.
Yeah, I do have, I guess, because I might be hearing what you're saying. It's like I'm not giving it any attention that it doesn't need. Would that be it? Like by attempting
it? It's a little bit of that. I think it can't, one of the hardest struggles with cancer I've been finding, besides the treatment and all that terrible stuff, is just the fear of recurrence afterwards, because there's no such thing as cancer-free. Right now, there's no evidence of cancer.
So there's remission, because we hear remission a lot.
With some cancers, yes. Like especially, I think, like
leukemia.
Things go into remission.
But breast cancer is what you're saying, that it's, you're never cancer-free? Or?
Well, it's not a term that the doctors use anymore. And my oncologist, who I adore, this is the way she says it, and she's very technical. She goes, there's no evidence of cancer right now. So I'm 3 years, tomorrow, 3 years since my treatment, which is awesome. They call it no evidence of disease, NED. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to pop back. And cancer is like an insidious little thing that can kind of pop back. So I know and I don't know about a lot of other survivors, struggle with, is it going to come back? It's always kind of there. So when I think about a cancer survivor, I think that's just, I don't want to claim that title, because it's almost like daring cancer to prove me wrong. So I prefer to say that I've had cancer, and then it keeps me on my toes for living my life daily with joy, and it keeps me on my toes for self-care. Like, okay, I'm going to go for that run. I'm going to eat well. I'm going to find happiness every day. It just kind of...
By saying that you're cancer-free right now, or by adhering to your doctors, those words, that's what helps you?
By kind of knowing that, you know, it could come back at any time.
Okay.
Life is short. You know,
so you're going to live well, and you're going to live large.
Live well and live large, and just because you just kind of, once you have cancer, it changes your life, and you're always going to be a person who's had cancer. And they say, you shouldn't have wine, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that. But the reality is, you do have to think about those things, because your body's shown you that, I can get, you're not one of those people who can say, it's never going to happen to me, because it's happened to
me.
So it's, so you always keep that in the back of your mind. Mm. So in some ways it's a good tool.
So how did that all begin? Like, how, because I know this is for anybody, any women listening, about, you know, identification of it. How did you find out that you had breast cancer?
Well, my story is a fluke. I really do feel like the gods were smiling on me for how I found my cancer. I was did regular mammograms, and I'd had one. So this was back in 2015. I had a regular mammogram in June. And, oh, great, you know, clear. We did the high five at the dinner table when the results came in with my, you know, okay, I'm
like
good.
The rest of us do when we go for our annual mammograms.
And there was no reason why you went. It was just a normal
mammogram. Yes.
Just in the process of the age, and therefore you got one.
Yeah. So when you're 40, they kind of generally start. My grandmother had breast cancer, and my doctor said, okay, when you're 40, we're going to start doing mammograms. So, okay.
So regular screen, you're on the regular screening program.
Yes. Which is now kind of changed, and we can talk about that after. Yes. It's 50 now, which I don't like. I think it should be 40. But when I started, they were doing them every couple of years. So I was 47 at the time, and I'd had them about every second year, and I had it was all clear. It was all good. So then in November, fast forward to November, just 5 months later, I'm at a conference in St. Andrews, and I forgot to pack the shower puff that I normally use to wash. I'm in the hotel, and I got a busy day ahead, and I just was washing with my hand instead of the puff, and I felt a big lump underneath my left side of my breast, and it was like the size of a golf ball. It was big, and I thought, how the heck did, what is this? What the
heck? How did you miss it?
Well, how, that's the thing. Like, it's been there growing.
And I wasn't vigilant with my self-exams. I trusted my mammogram that, okay, you're good, and then you're kind of good. I wasn't checking every month, and this can't be anything. I've just had a mammogram. It's all good. So I was kind of worried about it, and I went through my day, and the next day I got in to see my doctor, and she looked at it, and she said, well, no, you've just had a clear mammogram. No, it's got to be fine.
But it was the size of a golf ball.
It was big. Yeah, it was big. That's, and kind of into my chest, but she said it might just be a cyst. It's probably nothing. Yes. 80% of lumps, so women are scared to check, but 80% of anything you find is
especially
benign.
If you have fiber. I have fibrous breasts, yep. So I have lumps everywhere, and so I'm always checking. Like, it's a daily thing for me, because I've had to go in for several mammograms because of that, right? So for me, it's diligence.
Good for you.
Yeah.
To do that.
Well, and my mother, so mom was always, you know, she's like, oh, touch your boobies all the time. So mom, you know, mom has always been very open about those things. Those are conversations we had at the house. And not because there were women in my family that had breast cancer, although my grandmother's sister, so my great aunt, but it was always check yourself.
Good for you.
Yeah. Not normal, because I don't think most women do.
Too many women are scared to check. And I always say, don't be scared to check, because you might as well just deal with it. If you find something, deal with it, because the longer you leave it, the more.
Is that what it is? Is it fear of finding something checking?
I think women are terrified.
Yeah. Because what did you experience when you're in the shower and you experience this golf ball? I think I probably would have flipped out in the shower.
It was terror. It was sheer terror, just sitting there feeling it. And I knew I had a busy day. There was no way I could go to the doctor that day.
So here you are. Right, I have a busy day.
Yes.
Well, shit.
I was, that conference was a year in the planning, and you know, and there was a big dinner that night, and I was they were my clients, and I couldn't, what am I going to do? So I thought, and you're going to paste a smile on your face, and you're going to go on with your day. Oh, and then you go in the next day. Right. So I thought, one day is not going
to
matter.
Right. But try to concentrate all day.
Yes, it was, it was terrible. So I kind of made excuses, left the conference early the next day. My doctor's like, okay, I think it's nothing, but we're going to send you to the surgeon just to have a look.
Yes.
So she put me at quite a bit at ease.
Yeah.
And then,
I think that's, you have to, because you'll be freaking out.
I was nervous, but I felt better when I left her office. Okay, oh, it's probably nothing. Now, before I could get into the surgeon, it was 3 weeks.
Right.
Because that's just the way it is in New Brunswick. In healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I got in to see my amazing surgeon, Dr. Sharon Chu. I just adore her. And she walked in and we did a little checkup. And I didn't even take my husband with me to that appointment, because I was so sure that it was going to be nothing. And she lays me down on the table and she goes, okay, where are you feeling it? And I went, right there. She went, oh, that. And I went, what, that?
Yeah,
that. And she was like, okay, we're going to send you off for another mammogram and an ultrasound and perhaps a biopsy today. And I'm like, today, right now? She said, don't worry, it's just protocol. And the St. Joe's Breast Clinic, they're an amazing spot, and they do everything.
Right there.
Yeah. They don't want it. They just put you right through. And she said, no, this is fine. But I was kind of going, I don't know.
Yeah.
So we did a mammogram. We did an ultrasound. And while we were in doing the ultrasound, it's like the technicians couldn't quite believe it, and they were going, wait, when did you have your last mammogram? And that's when you're like, oh, and I said, June. So they pull up my old screens and they just give me another mammogram. And she looks at them and she said, I said, why, what are you seeing? And she said, well, she goes, I just can't believe that there's something this big that wasn't there. And she said, well, now looking back on your June scan, I can kind of see a little something.
A shadow.
On one of the screens, because they take different angles, right? Mm-hmm, so there was four on one of them. And I'm going in my head, I'm like, what? So then they do the needle biopsy. And she finished all that, and then they're all done, and there's only the technician left there, and I'm totally freaked out by this point. And I was getting dressed, and I turned to her, and I said, this is bad, isn't it? And the look on her face just told me everything I needed to know. She can't say anything. She doesn't know.
It's not her place to say.
They do the biopsy for the biopsy. She can't, but I could tell. So I walked out of there, and I went down to just in a daze, and I walked down to the car, and I phoned my husband, and I said, I think I've got cancer. And he said, what, what's going on? No, you don't. And he left work right away, and we went to the Starbucks by the East Point Mall. And I just sat there stunned. I said, I know I have cancer. I know I do. And he said, no, you don't. And we start Googling on the phones, and no, it's 80% chance it's nothing. And I said, no, I can just tell by what that nurse
said. They
must have seen it before. It was just gut instinct.
Yes.
But I knew then that I had something. And then there was another, the waiting is the worst. Then there was 2.5 weeks to get the results back. My doctor, unfortunately, was on vacation. And so the day that we went back to the surgeon, the poor surgeon had to give me the results rather than your family doctor. I knew she was going to say those words, it's cancer. And my husband, who was with me then, he was quite upset because he, in his mind, he had still kind of said, no, it's probably nothing.
It's probably nothing.
Mm. He was explaining it away. So you just go 2 weeks knowing that your life's going to change. And it was December, it was just before Christmas. So one day you're planning for Christmas with your kids, you're just doing this and that. The next minute, like your whole life is turned upside down.
Yeah.
And so the reason that I talk about this is because the reason they couldn't see my tumor is because I have dense breasts.
Right.
So I don't, do either of you know if you have dense breasts?
No.
And up until your breast cancer and you talking about it, I had no idea, Kathy,
really?
That there was a thing.
No. Really?
Until I read the CBC news article from a year ago that Elaine sent me, I was like, okay, this is going to be an interesting conversation tomorrow because I had never heard
of this.
So
how many other women don't know? Whether they have, so I'm headed for my mammogram, and because I'm on the early screening, and I have been since 40, every 2 years. So I'm heading there in October, you know, I have my pap, so all of those. And when you get your pap, they do a breast exam as well. But I've been told I have fibrous breasts, which is why they're
the same thing?
Lumpy.
It's not, so lumpy breasts aren't the same as dense breasts. So
tell us what dense breasts are. Define that for people who are listening who are just hearing this for the first time.
And need to go and ask.
So it's very common. About 40% of women have dense breasts. And all it means is that you have more glandular tissue compared to fatty tissue. And why it's important is because on a mammogram, dense breasts are white and so are tumors. So it masks any tumors.
So it masks your...
It hides.
It makes it incredibly hard for the radiologists to see if you have any lumps.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a double whammy, unfortunately. It also increases your risk of getting breast cancer. It's a bigger risk factor than family history.
Why does it contribute to increasing it?
I don't know the science behind that, but there's enough research that they know that women with dense breasts have a higher incidence of breast cancer. So you know how we all kind of freak out that, oh, my sister had breast cancer and my mother had breast cancer, and women stress about that?
And Angelina Jolie, like that whole thing that went on with her with the BRCA8,
I don't know what
the specific
gene that her mother had, and she had the same gene, so she had her breasts removed.
Yes.
People making decisions as a result of family
hereditary
history. But you're saying this is a greater risk than family history.
Oh my gosh.
Well, the genetic testing, that would be, I think it would be different. But I know that, it increases the... That's the thing that struck me. And I said, bigger than family history? It increases your risk more than family history. And it makes it harder to see the tumors in the first place. So it's a double whammy.
Yeah. And the stats... It for women in New Brunswick is kind of
horrific,
sort of staggering. that what it 40, was like
40% was like 81,000 women.
So 81,000 women and 18, in New Brunswick.
18,000 of those people are in the highest category.
And do they even know?
And no, they. I don't think. Who knows? Well, that's, so when I start going through treatment, people would ask me how you got your cancer, and I tell them the story, and then I would say, well, do you know your breast density? Every single woman, and I, you know, I have smart, educated friends who go to their doctor a lot, and they were like, they'd never heard anything about it. And that's when I kind of knew, you need to tell women about this. And so now I ask almost every woman I meet, do you know your breast density? I'll meet people like almost anywhere, like at a mixer. I was at a mixer a few weeks ago, and she goes, you look familiar. Oh yeah, you're the Tell Me girl. And I said, well, do you know your breast density? And she was like, I just met you. Now we're discussing our breasts.
And I think we need to be discussing our breasts. Yes. I think that because of the numbers of women that are getting breast cancer and that are going undetected, this conversation needs to come out of the closet, the shame, the fear, and it needs to be happening, which is, you know, why we wanted you here today.
Well, one of the things that really intrigued me, though, in the CBC article of September of last year is that you had a conversation pre-election. We had a provincial election here, and both parties committed to, if they were elected, to start making sure that women knew their breast density, like the doctors. I don't know what process that would be. So we now have one of those governments in. Have they kept that commitment?
I'm hearing that by November, that by this fall, that it's going to happen.
What would that look like? So they're going to how are they going to, is it going to be mandating doctors or we all have to find, is it evident
right now?
Is it evident on their mammogram and then they just a matter of telling the women?
Well, what happened for me, and I think it's pretty common across the province, was that, so after all this was done, I looked back at all my mammogram reports that I had done before cancer. They all, and these are the ones, these are the reports that go to the doctor, not to the patient. But I went in and asked for mine.
So if you ask for those, you can see them.
Yes. Every single one said I had dense breasts.
Oh my gosh.
But no one told me that. Like, so my doctor would get that report and she just saw that it's just all clear. You know, you don't have anything to worry about. So and then you also get a letter, at least after I did my screening, I would get a letter that said, okay, you have an all clear. You know, come back in for your next. So my big thing was, okay, in that letter, if a mammogram, you can only determine breast density by a mammogram, by a radiologist. You can't tell by looking at your breasts. You can't tell by feeling your breasts.
Okay.
So women with small breasts say, oh, my breasts can't possibly be dense. Yes, they can.
Even
though they're small. My breasts are kind of flabby. No, I can't be dense. No, they can be dense. The only way you can tell is have a radiologist determine it.
Right? Through your mammogram.
They have to look at the screen. And if you go to Dense Breast Canada, Google that, there's pictures there and it's quite startling.
CBC articles, they did show, which is fantastic.
Yes.
So people Google you, they will see the videos.
Yes, because there's four different categories. There's A and B, that they're not really dense at all. And then there's C and D. So D is the highest, very dense. And mine was C. So it's kind of like almost,
but they
almost
showed
there.
Didn't they show a lump? Was that your lump that they showed?
No,
it was a lump they showed, and they showed the lump.
And that you can't see.
You couldn't see it.
So I have, like, you know, people say, oh, were you ticked off that they missed it? And I'm not really, because I can see how hard it is to see. Right. And the people who were seeing it, like, in the November, they had the benefit of knowing the lump was there, and they had the benefit of comparing the two screens. So in hindsight, it's easy to see. But just by itself, the first one, it's like so I wish that I had known that I had dense breasts.
Well, this is the thing, though. Because this seems a stupid question. Do the doctors not understand or know that the problematic situation, the dense breasts,
I think there's.
Do they understand that?
I think there's a lot of education to do for family doctors, and that's one of the things that's going to be happening in New Brunswick, because some are more attuned to it than others.
Yeah, because I would think if I was a doctor, I would be, if I knew that this is a very specific thing, that this is puts people at higher risk, that I would be telling my patients that, which makes me think that doctors don't know. But I'm just wondering, do they know and they're not mandated, they don't need to tell you? Confusing.
You know, family doctors, they have a lot on their plate and they're dealing with so many different varieties of things. And I think that sometimes, like,
as a general practitioner,
a screen comes in and they say, oh, it's all clear, and they move on. So I do think that there's an education piece there for family doctors, but it's more important that women are their own
advocates. You have to be.
Yeah.
And that they ask their, they can, right now in New Brunswick, anybody, you can go, and if you've had a mammogram, it should be noted. Some provinces in other Canada weren't even writing down the breast density.
No,
New Brunswick was ahead and was doing that. So if you want to know your breast density here in New Brunswick, go ask to see your report. It should be written right on there.
Okay.
But hopefully starting this fall, it will be sent out to women. So if you go in for a routine mammogram, this is what I think, what I'm hoping is going to happen. You go in for a routine mammogram, when you get your letter coming back saying it's all
clear,
good, there's just going to be 3 or 4 lines there. The mammogram determined that you have dense breasts in C category, and then I don't know how it's going to roll out, but I'm hoping that they have a brochure that explains what dense breasts is and what women need to know about it.
Mm.
And then at least you have the power of that knowledge.
Yes.
Women will have that knowledge. And you can. So if I had known I had dense breasts, I would have been checking my breasts every month. I wouldn't have trusted my mammogram
right.
as much as I did. I probably would have been more vigilant with my exercise and my eating, knowing that it's another risk factor.
Right,
I need to
right.
think of
for you, in particular, because of the dense breast.
Yes. It's like not telling me that I have high blood pressure, right?
Right.
So I can manage my condition. Tell me I have dense breasts so I can do everything
yes.
I want to do
right.
and then to manage my condition. And then you have a discussion with your doctor, because everyone is different for their risk factors for cancer. And, you know, maybe there's additional screening that you're going to do because maybe you have other risk factors as well. And because of your conversation with your doctor, you're going to go for an ultrasound or, you know, maybe an MRI, or if you've had cancer before. They can't offer MRIs to, and they shouldn't offer to every woman. That's not like a screening tool. But there's lots of stuff women can do if they have that information.
Well, it's the knowledge first.
And so those other screening options or screening tools, so you mentioned having an ultrasound.
Yes.
So what else are they doing in New Brunswick, because that's where we live, or elsewhere in the world, to do that next level of screening?
Well, and there's no perfect, unfortunately, there's no perfect diagnostic tool. Right now, mammogram is one of the best that we have. It doesn't work as well as it should for women with dense breasts. But in the States, where they have legislation, I think it's 30, it might be 38 or 32 states that legislate that women have to be told. It seems to be easier to access other screening like ultrasounds and MRIs here in New Brunswick, and most parts of Canada, not so much.
And is that because of the cost?
I think I would guess that
because
the cost doesn't. Plus, my doctors do say that ultrasound isn't the best. It's better if you find a lump. Ultrasound is great to go right up. They can go right on the lump. They don't love it as a screening tool, and there seems, this is what I'm thinking, to be quite a bit of controversy in the whole radiologist world about screening tools and when to use each one.
Right.
So what I say is that's why you just need to have a discussion with your doctor and see what's best for you.
Mm.
But ultrasounds would. I think that women with dense breasts should have ultrasounds.
Because what I seem to be hearing a lot of now or recently is like women coming back and have to have them redone because they're not clear. And I'm wondering why that is happening. Or, you know, I don't know if you have any sort of insight on that or not, but is it because, you know, are radiologists reading these or are they technicians? It seems to me, why are we now have this loop of check and recheck? Are we just a anxious society?
I don't know that, but I think that when they call you back for a recall, they're just being thorough. Because they're not, if you have dense breasts, they're having trouble seeing something.
And maybe that's why they want to be sure.
The people that you're talking about, maybe they aren't aware that their breasts are dense.
Yes.
And so they don't know what the call-in is about.
They're
not armed with that knowledge.
Yes.
Of whether their breasts are dense or fatty, right?
Yeah.
So there's the dense, fatty, are those sort of the two options, like, is that
yes.
what we're looking at?
Yeah, yeah.
So you got one or the other,
and they change during your lifetime as well.
Well, here's the thing.
Your density can change as you get older.
Good,
so
good
that's why
know.
It's important.
I know postmenopausal because I do check, and I can tell a difference in my breasts. Like after menopause,
yeah.
they feel different. They feel more for lack of a better word, flabby.
Yeah.
Like they're looser. They're not as firm as they used to be. So, I mean, I'm also feeling a difference in the postmenopause. So I think that's another reason to know your body.
Well, one of the arguments against giving breast density notification information is that there seems to be a thought that women will just get too upset about being recalled or even knowing right. about their dense breast to know that they have a risk factor. Which feeds into this fear
we've talked about.
Yes, and I that just makes me mad. It seems a little bit condescending to me. Would you not tell a man he has high blood pressure because you're afraid he's going to worry about it? And I'm sorry, but I will trade 2 weeks of a little stress about that over a stage four diagnosis.
Yes.
Because
is what's happening. They're catching at stage four.
Too late. So when I say that I'm grateful for my second chance, so after everything was said and done, I was stage two, but I had an aggressive kind of cancer that was growing fast, obviously, if the lump was growing that big. So when I think about what would have happened if I hadn't gone to the hotel that day and right. I hadn't checked my breasts, I trusted my mammogram, and then what if I didn't
two
find
years
it
till, later till
or till February and suddenly I'm stage four? And the hard truth is that women with stage four breast cancer can live for a long time, but it's not curable.
It's a tougher battle.
Tougher battle. No, women die. Mm-hmm. Like people think the breast cancer, the whole kind of pink thing about breast cancer is like, oh, we've got that. It seems to be, the opinion seems to be, oh, the women can, it's breast cancer, you know, you'll get through it. Yes, many
the
women.
The optimism,
many
right?
women get through yes. it. And I'm so happy that the treatments have come to a way and there are so many women surviving breast cancer now. But a stage four diagnosis, like, you know, you can live for years, but you're...
Is it, and it's probably metastasizing somewhere else.
That's what
at that
stage
point.
Four means. Okay. It's in your bones. It's in your brain. Okay. And sorry, you're eventually that cancer.
And I have a friend that's happened to. So she, so she had breast cancer and, you know, she was going every, whatever they do, the checks, their mammograms were clear.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, it showed up in three other places in her body because they aren't doing full body scans. They're doing breast scans.
Yeah.
And it showed up in a weird way. She went for a blood test and her liver enzymes were off.
This was her recurrence or her first?
This is her recurrence.
Yeah.
Her liver enzymes are off. And so I said to her, why are we not doing better screening after women have breast cancer and not just checking the breast, but checking everything else?
I finished my treatment and I didn't do any screens. Nothing. So I've had
when you
cancer.
Say screens, what you mean more well,
I do
breast
I do
screens,
I do or? Mammograms, but they so before treatment they give you all the screens because they want to see if it's anywhere else before
okay.
before they is it
they
in your bones
treatment?
Yeah. yeah but when you're done treatment they just assume that it's nowhere else. And I said to my doctor, so what do you mean I'm not getting another full body scan now the treatment's done? She said, well, basically it comes down to like mortality rates. Like it doesn't matter. The
it
same
doesn't...
number of women are going to die whether they get scanned or they don't get scanned. So they just don't scan you. They wait for symptoms.
And that's what happened with her was the symptoms.
Yeah.
And she had the blood work done. Her blood work was fine, but her liver enzymes were off. And so the liver enzymes, it showed up in her liver and that's how they caught it.
See, and that's the big fear. That's a big
yes.
fear for me. That's why I don't like Survivor. That's why
yes.
I just, you know.
You're living.
You live in the moment.
You got it. Because I know that my whole day could change like by tomorrow.
Because you've been there.
I've
were
been
there.
I've done that. Yes. I know that. So it's, I get up in the morning and I say, okay, how am I feeling today? Am I feeling good? Move on with your day. Because that's all you've got is today. Move on with your day. If you're feeling good, take advantage of how you're feeling.
Can you speak more to the mental side of dealing with breast cancer? Like, as you just said, is that so? Have you developed some practices just not to get, like you say, get through your day and get through life, but how has that impacted your mental health or to deal with living life, like you said, joyfully?
It's funny, my husband says in many ways it's been tougher since my treatment was over than during it. Because during it, you kind of, you know you have it, you know what your treatment path is,
right.
and you just kind of all
you put
your
head down.
You put your head down, you're focusing on, I'm getting through this chemo, I'm getting through
beating
this radiation.
It. You have a goal to beat it, right?
Yes, and you see your doctors often because you're right in the middle of treatment. Well, and you're just feeling chemo knocks you on your butt, and you're very focused on just getting through. Then once it's
and Jory, you've got a lot of people around you talking to you about it.
And
so there's
support. There's lots of support and people
yes.
bring you meals and people are checking
right.
in and
yes.
You're just, yes. And then when you're done, suddenly it's, oh my God, you're done. Yay. Woohoo. And there's almost a sense of, well, she's done with that and she's over it. When really the mental scars, she beat it. And in your head, you're going, I don't know if I really beat it. I think I beat it. I think I'm okay, but I'm not sure if I really beat it. The whole mental part of it afterwards was hard. And there are like a few support groups and things that you can go to afterwards, but I did find it's you're kind of done and they let you loose. And then you're suddenly just left to deal with the...
Left hanging.
Aftermath. And if you go down the rabbit hole of... So that's what I was finding what would happen to me. You would just go down the rabbit hole of worry.
Right.
And what do you want to do? So what I had sort of different strategies for treatment and different strategies for afterwards. And my afterwards strategy is I can't let myself dwell. If I find myself dwelling on fear of recurrence, I get distracted. I avoid Google. I avoid reading stories about if somebody else has cancer. People send me, like, I kind of keep that out of my mind. And just since February, I focus on finding joy every day. Mm-hmm. One moment of joy. And because I'm like a busy mom, and you're back to work, and your clients want you to be busy and back to work again. I thought, what can I manage in my day? I thought, okay, I can manage doing one thing every day that makes me purely happy. And that could be anything from dancing in my kitchen to Billy Idol, and my kids think
Rebel Yell.
It was Rebel Yell. It totally was that song.
Sounds appropriate.
I know.
That's a fantastic song.
I was in the kitchen.
I think we can insert, if we can figure out how to insert a little bit of Billy Idol.
Yell.
It was my first day. I promised to find joy that day, and I went down to the kitchen. It was supper time, and I thought, I haven't found any joy today. What's going on? And I had to make supper, and I'm going, well, I'm just going to put some music on. And I went through my play. There it came on. So I start dancing just like I'm at university. Like
Talk
drinking
about
rum
the universe.
With the head banging.
And then my daughter comes in from basketball with my husband. And she's just like, what? And then she joined me. And we started dancing around the kitchen. I thought, that is a moment of joy. And that's it.
That feels like a universally divine picked song. Where you go, yes. Look through and you go, oh, there it is. Rebel Yell.
Yeah.
That I can join in with.
And isn't that, I mean, Kathy, isn't it what we all want is to for joy? Yeah. I mean, everybody wakes up and it's not like they're looking for joy, but I think that's what people want.
Well, I think Kathy's telling us you choose it.
Well,
right?
You kind of have to find it. So some nights it's just watching a little bit of junk TV. Some days it's going for a run. Some days it's, you know, snuggling with your husband on the couch. It's just find one little thing that makes you happy every day. And what I'm finding since I started doing that is it's increasing. So it's not just one little moment of joy. I'm finding it's getting more.
It's a ripple.
More of my day is doing joyful things. And then once you choose joy a couple times, then you think, you know, that felt really good. So maybe I could do that two or three times today. Maybe
right.
I could do that a little more today. So I've noticed in the past year that, and part of it is I'm feeling better as well.
Right.
Because treatment kind of hangs around afterwards.
Just physically stronger.
Physically stronger. Those chemo drugs, like they have long last. I have long lasting effects right now that I've aged 20 years. And my body will never be the same. And you just kind of be patient and accept that. But I am feeling better, so that it's easier to choose joy when you're feeling better.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? It's a much easier state when you go there. But I think that is such a great philosophy, is that you have to choose the joy. And that's what happens, is that it can snowball when you caught yourself going, hey, I felt good. I did more joyful things than not today.
It almost feels like Stephen's meditation. When he said the meditation, and you've said this, Dana, it's like it diminishes the fog, right?
Kind of erases away
right?
that stress.
And then the joy, like what you're doing, is building that up. Mm. So there's, you know, two really beautiful ways for people to make their life whole.
Yes, exactly.
That's so crazy. Yeah, it's the effects of that, I think people don't really, you hear it and we can't even completely understand, you know, what taking chemo drugs, and even though those are the life-saving things, the impact on that woman. Like how did your husband, or how, this is a good question for, I think, any of us, if we know people going through breast cancer, is how can we support someone going through breast cancer so we don't get all weirded out and draw away from them because we're not sure what to say? Like
we're uncomfortable.
Yeah, for whatever shticks we have, or we don't want to put them uncomfortable, you know, make them uncomfortable. Like what would you have needed or liked when you're going through that?
Well, I was very public about my treatment,
right,
as Elaine probably knows, because, and that was kind of a conscious choice. Like I wrote about it, and it was therapy. I would write about Facebook, and I would meet
some of
the
blog
treatment.
Do you not? Or I saw some blogs that you had written about
so I'm a writer. So I was, I wrote a little bit about it for the Huffington Post and things. And, but every day I would go to treatment or whatever. And if I met someone interesting, I would just come home and write about it. And that helped me. That was my therapy. So, but one of the reasons I announced my diagnosis on Facebook, because I thought we're in a small community and people would eventually find out. I would rather just people know. And then when I'm at Cochran's Market or I'm at the store, they can feel comfortable coming up to me and saying, how are you doing? And my best advice is just ask someone, how are you doing today? And let them take the lead. Because some days when I did not want to talk about cancer, I just wanted to go get my groceries or whatever. But other days, lets them take the lead. Other days, I was happy to talk about it. And so I'd just be general. Whatever you do, don't talk about other people you know who are dying from cancer.
Right.
And you would not believe how many times that happens. And because it's a different cancer, people would think that I wouldn't worry about it. And they would say, oh my God. That, you know, he's just 50. They're preparing his funeral.
Oh my God.
He's got prostate cancer. They're preparing his funeral. And I'd be sitting in my head, I'm going, you know, I have cancer, right? And that it doesn't matter that I don't have prostate cancer. I'm probably worrying right now that I'm going to die from cancer. So,
don't know.
They don't know. And they talk to fill the space.
It's nervous energy.
Yeah.
But I like that you say, how are you feeling right now? How are you feeling today?
Yes.
Not the general, how are you feeling? I don't know if that's helpful or not, but
how's your day?
Versus how are you maybe doing? Cause I think that is, you know, you don't want to walk away from people who are going through something cause they need even more support. But I think there is always this awkwardness of how to discuss it or approach the person who's going through it.
Right. And I don't want anyone who spoke to me and said that to me to feel bad.
It's
awareness.
It's anything. It's better to say something than to say nothing.
And to ignore you while you're at Cochran's.
Yes. And because some people were, so I would find I would spend some time, I would say, oh, hi. And just, I wanted people to treat me as normally as they could. So I would have friends who'd say, you know, they'd be having a bad day at work or something and they'd phone to complain. I can't complain to you about, you know, my bad day because you have cancer. And I think, no, yes, you can, because I want to feel normal. I don't want to feel like, I don't want to think about my
cancer. Like you're tiptoeing around you.
Don't tiptoe around me. Please treat me the same as you always did. I want to hear about the ups and downs in your life. And you like, I'm not less interested because I can't focus on being sick all the time.
Right. And I think there's a piece of it when if you hear other people's problems, you think, oh, great, they have problems too. Yeah. Right. We're all human, that they're not living a perfect life. And I'm the one going through this difficult thing. Everybody has something.
And lots of people are going through way worse than I am. Yeah, people say, but you have cancer. I said, well, no, like, I don't want to be a burn victim. I don't want to have chronic pain every day. That would be...
Everybody's going through something. Yeah. So when my friend... I think it was a year ago, she texted me and she said, so where you been? And I'm like, around. And she called me out on not being around. Like, she's like, I'm still here. Like, come and visit me. So I went down to her house and I said, you know what? Thank you. And
her this and her is husband, your friend with this, cancer?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And her husband are sitting there and he's a relative of mine. So we're having this conversation. And I said, I am really sorry because I said, I'm uncomfortable and I don't know what to do. And I said, thank you for calling me out because I enjoy your company. And I just wasn't sure what to say. And she said, this is great. Like, and the three of us sat there and cried.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I didn't know what to do.
It's better to say something than to say nothing.
Yes.
And just reach out. What do you need?
I wasn't being a good friend.
Yeah.
I was being a terrible friend because I was uncomfortable.
Yeah. But it's understandable.
Yeah.
If it was switched, I would be the same.
Yeah. And so I think that these conversations are important. For all of us, right? Because people are going, and whether you're going through cancer, or like you said, you know, you lose a job, you're a burn victim, whatever it is, I think that we need to have conversation with people that we care about. And how do we open those lines of communication?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't sweep it under the rug.
Right, no. Yeah, support them.
Yeah,
because we all need support, right? And especially if you're going through a difficult time.
Yeah.
So you I know you've definitely had a change in perspective in life because you said you you focus more on choosing joy. What other things changed for you in terms of how you view life or your perspective on it?
I'm a very much life is short person now, and don't put things off. Like
do what you love
to
do.
Do it now because you never know what, like, next week you could be in a totally different
situation.
Which is why, so I'm going on to Scotland this week on a writer's retreat. And it's not really the best time for me to go. I'm kind of busy. I can't really afford it. But the opportunity came up and I chatted with my husband about it. And he's like, no, you have to go. So would I have made that decision 4 years ago? I don't know if I would have. But now I'm going, okay, this is an opportunity that's not going to present itself again. Mm-hmm. So I don't put things off. right. as much. I tried it.
It's a great lesson.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you're going with a friend.
Going with a friend, and there's a group of 20 of us, from New Brunswick, from Atlantic Canada, a couple from Toronto, and out from some Saskatchewan, and we've got a great writing tour.
And it's planned. a writing retreat.
It's a literary, yes, a writing retreat. So we're spending the first 5 days in a castle. So I looked at my agenda next week.
That's amazing.
And I know. And the agenda, it was like
in Scotland,
in the Highlands of Scotland, where they're filming Outlander somewhere around there. I'm going to be like on the trail of Jamie Fraser, I think a little bit.
So there might be some kilts.
I'm going to see some kilts. Yeah, so that'll bring me joy. That'll be a joyful moment right there.
All the men listening are like, "What's Outlander?"
But I looked at my schedule.
Who's Jamie?
I looked at my schedule and I'm like, "Wait, you have 5 days to just." All it says is breakfast, writing, lunch, writing,
breakfast, writing,
like writing,
and writing can mean anything. Could be sitting and looking at the scenery.
It can be at the pub. I can go for a run.
You can write a note at the pub.
Yeah, I can be writing from the pub, and I'm kind of going. Like, for me, I feel like I'm robbing a bank and I'm getting away with it. Because, you know, when do you have a chance just to focus on what you know? If you're not a writer, that would be a hideous way to spend 5 days. But I am a writer, so I'm like, no, I love it.
Bring it on.
Yes, bring it on.
And how was using writing as your passion help you get through cancer?
Honest to God, it helped me so much. Because I'm a journalist, so I'm Chatty Cathy in a waiting room, and
you literally are Chatty Cathy. Cathy with a K. Yeah, I get
Chatty
Cathy capital with K.
I would walk into a waiting room and I can't help myself, and I would just chat with people, and I met so many incredible people, and they would have great stories, and I would have this urge, even not all the time because chemo really messes with your brain, but I would when I'd have the energy. I would sit and write about the person I met, and sometimes a lot of people, the chemo room can be a very sad place because there's a lot of people in a tougher situation than you are. You kind of compare your mountain lions when you're there, and you're sometimes thankful that, okay, I only have this little mountain lion, but that person over there has a big mountain lion. And anyway, so writing about it, when I would finish writing a little post and post it, I would feel better.
Therapeutic.
It was therapeutic. And so after a while, I thought, oh, people are going to hate me because I'll be Cancer Girl on Facebook and I'll just be writing about
it. It was Human Story Girl. I mean, that's what I was seeing was that when I was reading them, was human stories.
Mm, that's good.
The connection.
Good. Because I was like, oh, my friends are going to drop me because no one's going to want to read about that. No. But I tried. So when I wrote that, I would try to find the good things in. So, you know, random observations about being bald. So I would write, you know, 8 or 10 things about the good and bad parts that people
would it
might
be funny?
Not know. Yeah, yes. So I would try to make it funny because, you know, like trying on hats when you have no hair, I look like Mrs. Roper on Three's Company. you put stuff on and you're like, okay, that's hideous. I really do look like people, because some women look great in turbans. I look like Mrs.
Roper.
Roper.
Yeah, yeah. She didn't even
know. I needed a boo-boo, a flowy boo-boo.
Your caftan, yeah.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
So I would try to find something funny about anything that you were going through.
Try to find that joy again, using your writing tool as a way to sort of express that in the world.
Or just interesting things, because, few people know that when your hair falls out, it hurts.
Oh, really?
So the because it's falling right out from the root. So the follicle is very sore. So I couldn't put anything on my head for a while. And my friend from Toronto, who I'm going to Scotland with, her husband went out and bought me this black toque. And I put it on. It was the most comfortable thing, but I look like a bank robber. I just walked everywhere I went. I look like a bank robber. And I thought, I couldn't find anything.
Were people following you around the store, like the big security guy?
I couldn't find anything that looked remotely attractive. And then after a while, you're just like, okay, if I'm a bank robber, it feels good. I'm a bank robber.
You're just going with it.
Yeah.
Oh, so you really used all of your, I guess, your communications and your journalism through this whole journey, which comes to, we haven't talked a whole lot about Tell Me, your hashtag Tell Me campaign.
Yes, yes.
I mean, we've sort of alluded to it a bit during the conversation, because that was the thing that you really, I think, drove home.
Yes.
Your message.
Well, I'll tell you how that came about. So, as I think I said, women would come up to me and they wouldn't know anything about breast density. So in the back of my mind, all going through treatment, I knew that this is something I have to do something about. And I would harangue all my friends all the time now. And then I knew the election was coming up, so it was kind of in the back of my mind. And after I'd written a piece for the Huffington Post about the run for the cure, and this woman from Dense Breast Canada, Jenny Dale, who is a force. I just adore this woman. She's a cancer survivor. There's two of them in Canada who started Dense Breast Canada, and everybody should go on that website and have a look, because they've done
Facebook.
Yes, yeah. They've done absolutely amazing work. She saw my piece, and I just mentioned that I had dense breasts, and she reached out to me and said, that's when I Googled dense breasts, and that's when I made the connection. So I knew that my lump was missed, but I didn't really know a lot about dense breasts until she reached out to me and I became educated. And she's, look, we need an advocate in New Brunswick. So I said, look, I'll do anything I can. I wrote a couple of op-eds encouraging the government to notify women, put it in the letter, notify women about their dense breasts. Nothing was really happening. It was kind of dragging on. I was getting the sort of polite brush off letters from the government. Oh yeah, thanks. We're looking at this. And I wasn't getting a commitment, and I knew the election was coming. So then one day I went into St. Joe's, and I was just for my regular checkup. And while I was in there, I walked in, and one of my very best friends in the whole world was sitting there. I didn't know she was coming. She didn't know I was coming. And I said, what are you doing here? And she said, I'm having a biopsy. And I said, what do you mean you're having a biopsy? She said, I have a lump. She has dense breasts. And the reason she was checking her breasts outside, she just had a clear mammogram, same as me. The reason she was checking her breasts was because of, she knew me. Mm-hmm. She knew about that. So she goes in, she has breast cancer. So this woman is one of my dearest friends in the world. And I kind of thought, you know, 1 in 8, I'm repping it for my friends. You know, no one else is going to get it. So when I went in, I said, Cynthia, this is what happened to her, too. And I went home to my husband. I said, we have to tell women, because what if there's other women who didn't know? Yes. And we're checking her breasts.
And weren't at the dinner parties having conversations with you to find out about it.
I found out about that. Yeah. So she's finished treatment now. She's no evidence of disease. She's doing great. And we did a duathlon together recently. But she, right then and there, I started doing the website. And we're talking with my kids at dinner. I said, we need a hashtag. We need to do something. We need something. Like, what am I going to do? Somebody said, I wish they'd just tell us. And then someone said, tell me. And we were like, yeah, that's it.
That's it.
So tell me, dis-moi. I did bilingual. I'm not French, but I wanted a bilingual hashtag as well. So we started that. So I just did a quick WordPress blog, and I tried to get together. And then when you're going to pull the trigger for a campaign, yes. I was like, oh my God, I was scared. I was like, do I want to go public with this? Like, what if it falls?
Because you
on
are
face?
Now being the front of...
This
thing that,
and if it goes well or not, you're the face of it, however it goes, right?
Yes. Well, and my friends, I said, okay, I need other women to take their pictures, because it can't be just me. They need to know that other women want to know this information.
Yes.
So, you know, where do you start? You're one person. So I call the women I have coffee with. And I said, I sent them all a message. Will you all send me a selfie? Will you be on my website? Will you do tell me? Will you tweet and all this? Yes, 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 yes. You just got to love your friends and fellow Girl Guide leaders. I love Girl Guide leaders. They all came in. So I had like 10 pictures of and all my good friends. I did put out the website, and then I'm sitting there. It was Labor Day weekend. The election was just starting, and I was like, okay, when do I press send? And no word of a lie, I'm sitting there at my daughter's soccer banquet, and this email comes in, this random email from a woman who had seen something. Doesn't know me. I don't know where she got my email address. She doesn't know me. She found, read something about dense breasts. And she said, I'm just writing to tell you that because I read your column that had been in the Huffington Post a few months earlier, I pushed my doctor for about breast density. She ended up getting an ultrasound and an MRI, and they found a cancer that was missed. And it was an aggressive small cancer. If she hadn't known, if she hadn't have pushed,
read your article.
She was there. And so I was crying my tears start pouring down my cheeks at the dinner. My husband's like, what is wrong with you? And I said, look at this email. And he read it and he said, oh my God. So I went home the next day and I just pressed publish.
Right.
And I said,
no fear.
You just got to do this. And thankfully, I got a little bit of media pickup here, and I knew a couple of, so I knew a woman on each of Brian Glant and Blaine Higgs's teams.
At this the time when they were running for the election.
Yeah. And this shows the importance of having a woman's voice. And I used to cover politics, so I still had a few connections. So I said, I sent my blog to one woman on the bus, Nicole Carlin, who's now his chief of staff. And, oh my God, I forget her last name. Joan Kingston. Sorry, Joan. chemo brain.
Joan's waiting for the name.
I know she was hanging.
she was on the liberal bus with Brian Glant. And I know there was, I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I know there was a lot of other voices pushing for it, but it took that. I said, here, you, this is, what do you think about this? And those women took it to Higgs, took it to Glant. Right. I don't know what happened behind the scenes after that, but they were pushing behind the scenes. And that just shows me the importance of women's voices. 100%.
In politics, 100%.
It got a little bit of media attention on top of that. And then within 2 weeks, both parties were making commitments for
it. They were making commitments.
And I was just elated, over the moon.
I'm sure.
Elated over the moon. And now it's been a year since that happened. But I truly believe that it's going to be announced in New Brunswick soon.
Yeah, that's so awesome. That because, you know, God love men, they don't have breasts like ours.
So it's not part of their... Yeah.
And it's not a... it's not a front of mind because you don't understand the importance of it. So what you're talking about, why we need to have women in these various corners, is because we, you know, there are certain things that we care about that are, you know, health related or family related or whatever, that, you know, we'll pick up the cause on because it matters to us. So that's a very,
you just need someone raising it. They all cared about the issue.
And, right. Yes.
But
someone need to put it in front of them.
It's the health minister, when I met him, Mr. Fleming, he said, this is a no brainer. Why isn't this being done? And I said, exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And it's now, already being checked. But it's not being
communicated. Right.
So it's being done. It's just that one step we're missing.
And the women aren't getting the communicated. I'm hearing about this for the first time. You know, I don't even remember the Tell Me campaign. I don't know where I was. I must have been under a rock or something. But that's interesting that, you know, people are going to be hearing about this for the very first time. And what I'm hearing is you're saving lives, you know, by doing that, by telling this.
Your stories really that you've already shared. Yes. I mean, all of those women, and there's more probably that have reached out to you. Mm.
I hope so.
More than a handful. So.
Yeah. That's why I'm doing it. That's what keeps me. I don't want anyone to leave their breast health to fluke like I did.
Right.
I feel like that's kind of
to fluke when we get a mammogram and we get the all clear. And that's what we're wanting.
Push it right back to the corner.
And then we go, woohoo. And let's not think about that for another year or two. And you know, you're pointing out the importance. There has to be a little bit more digging going on. And
women need to check their breasts every month. That's
so
what I say.
So what if someone just had a mammogram? And they got an all clear. What more should they be doing?
Well, right now, because there's no notification, ask for you to see your report or ask your family doctor specifically about your breast density and find out, because it'll say right on there, it'll say A, B, C, or D.
What if you're in C and D? If you're in a higher category, what should they do then?
If you're C or D, then I would have a discussion with your doctor about other risk factors you may have and whether you should do other screening. But then I would be vigilant. Check your breasts every month. Don't have to obsess about it. Pick a day on the calendar every month you go and just get to know the way they feel. Because now that I know this, I know I've got certain little bumps here and there, and I just feel them to see, okay, that's the same as last month, so it's good. It's the doctors have checked all my little bumps that I think I have. But so I just feel them, get to know what they feel like.
Because there's lots of reasons to have little bumps.
There's lots of reasons to have little bumps that you shouldn't even be worried about. And after treatment, I found another lump on my other breast and I freaked out and went to the doctor. They got me in very quickly for ultrasounds and said, no, this is just where your breasts are. It's nothing. So now I feel that spot all the time. Okay, it's the same as it always was.
Yes.
So I'm good. And same
awareness.
Awareness.
Mm. Know your body.
Mm. Know your body. Know how your breasts look. You know, check. And if you do find you're in the high category of dense breasts, you may want to increase your exercise. You may want to change your diet. There's other lifestyle things you can do that's going to bring your risk down.
Oh, so that's interesting. Can you do anything to make your breasts less dense, or are you born that way? Is this a risk factor thing?
No, I don't think you can change your breast density by any behavior that you do.
But what you're saying, you know, eat better, do whatever, that can just to lower your risk in general.
Yeah, so if you're a little bit, if you're overweight, like they say, you know, fat around your belly can increase your cancer risk. So, you lose a few pounds. Exercise. The other thing is exercise. They say 2.5 hours a week. So I try to run as much as I can.
That's and hard helps. To do. It's good for stress too. It great. Just gets it's rid of great you know. For stress.
You can yes. work out a lot of things in your head while you're walking or running or.
Sometimes I get a little jittery. I'm like, I just need to go for a run. I'll say in my head, like literally, I mean like run like crazy lady down the street, like not like a 5 kilometer, like just
with
get
your arms waving,
the energy Dana. Out of whatever's bugging you.
I have my best writing thoughts when I'm running. Sometimes I'm finding myself yeah. lately while I'm unlocked.
That's tough to note them because I'd forget them if I'm.
I know. I pull my iPhone out yes. and I'm like,
that's where I put them. I do that, and then I go back and I realize it doesn't understand my Miramichi accent. Oh. And then it's like, what did I just?
You can't put Miramichi accent yeah. for me.
I need Siri to be the Miramichi accent. Like, they don't understand that. Kathy, what did you learn about yourself through this process?
Through the
process, just through the process of going through cancer and not surviving it and in your post time, like what did you learn about yourself?
I don't know. Maybe that I'm stronger than I thought I was. Mm. Yeah, because you can kind of now, if you can do chemo, you can kind of do anything, and it changes your perspective on just general things in your life. Like if you're you know your flight's delayed at the airport.
What the heck?
I got bigger fish to fry.
I'm having a temper tantrum on the floor.
I don't stress about things as much
really?
Anymore. Yeah. Like I'm able to like not. I try to manage my worry better because what you know, there's no sense in worrying. Is not going to change right. anything. And that was the best that's strategy right. going through while you're waiting for all the results and things. That's very hard. But I would tell myself that worrying isn't going to change it. Like worrying, I can get up and worry all day about the right. biopsy results, but that's not going to change the thing. Are you going to waste yeah. this day worrying? So I've learned that I don't waste my, I try not to waste my day worrying about things I can't control.
Right. Accepting whatever moment you're in.
Yes.
Being
said
in
that
it.
Word surrender again, Dana.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. We hear it a lot on this show. We know we need to do it.
It is. It's surrendering to those things thoughts. Around yeah. us.
That yeah. you can't control.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, letting go, you know, yeah. things like that. And just the surrender is like giving in, but it's tough when you're
it's not giving.
Freak.
If it's not giving up. It's
no,
like
it's
letting go.
It's, no,
and with autumn
up.
Around us, I mean, that whole, the trees are, you know, they surrender all they, of their leaves mm-hmm. and they're okay.
Reflecting back to us what we need to be.
That's yeah. a good word. That's yeah. a good word.
I'm curious, what role did faith play in your journey? Like, did it activate spirituality? Did you have any to begin with? Did you find some?
I'm not a religious person, but I would say I'm a spiritual mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. And I would describe it this way. I always choose hope. I would always, my mother is, so my mother had lung cancer and 25 years ago, and she was told she had 6 months to live and basically don't take the treatment. You should just go on a nice trip. And yes. And she said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not
yeah,
doing that.
No thanks.
Give me everything you got. And she had an aggressive kind. It was, at this time, there was about a 3% survival rate.
Wow.
So she said that the way she dealt with it is she always puts herself in. Why can't I be in that 3%?
Right.
I'm not in the 97%.
Brilliant. Because wow. someone's in the 3%.
There's other people in the 3%.
And she so wants
I'm
in
gonna
there.
Be in the 3%. So that was her advice going for me. So I would look at the numbers and think, okay, I'm in the percent that is going to live for 20 years. So I kind of put that out there to the universe.
Yes.
And
we get that.
That's the mindset. I try to be my mindset is when, so when you go down the rabbit hole sometimes, but to pull myself out.
How long you stay in the rabbit hole. Yes. And Dana talks about that with your higher self. Right, you
well,
said
it's
that
connecting to that outright. Space, right? And that's what I'm hearing you're doing. You're like, no, you're choosing, and it's the awareness, right? And I think that's a big piece of it, being aware that you're spinning out of control or worries creeping in, and you take control of where you are, whether you're connected to that ego, the highest self. So,
you have to manage. It's something I have to manage every day. Every day,
right?
It's not. It doesn't go away.
Yeah, and I would say everybody has to manage that every
yes.
single day,
and
no matter what they're doing or going through. That's the problem when people go unconscious in their life or things are out of control, because it's like taking back the control and go, no, I'm choosing joy. I'm going to be the 3%. Yeah. I'm going to be the.
I love that you're choosing joy. You're choosing hope. Like choosing that is a
So
it's my bracelet.
Yeah. Well, what does your bracelet say? Oh, choose just a second here.
Choose joy.
And we'll show. We'll take a picture of that. Choose joy. Choose joy. Nice reminder.
My sister just gave me that for my birthday. I love it.
That's beautiful. I love it too. It's beautiful. Yeah. Well, this is gonna...
we're glad we chose to have you in the seat.
Yes.
Because I'm so happy you chose me to be in the seat.
Kathy. Yeah, and it's timely. We will have links to your Tell Me campaign and what's going on with October with breast cancer awareness. And ladies, check your boobies. And if it meant the men that are listening, get the women around you that you love to check their boobies. Yeah. Check your breasts.
Yeah, it's
get to know
it's
your body.
An important conversation, and we thank you for having it and sharing your perspective.
Oh, I'm so happy for you had me on the. It's my first podcast.
I'm very excited.
Another new thing.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Okay, and now we're back for the bonus segment with Kathy because we realized there's about, I don't know, a list of things that we didn't get to but are really important. So, Kathy.
Number one, we were just chatting about your mom choosing to be in the 3%. And I think it's an important note to know.
Yes, that she just turned 80.
After being given 6 months to live.
That was, about 30 years ago. Yeah, so crazy. So she is in the 3%.
So she chose to be in the 3%, and there she is, and... You guys are still enjoying her company.
Yes, my mother is my inspiration. She's the one who taught me to fight and to always choose hope.
So excellent.
Okay. So what do we need to know? What else do we need to know about this issue?
Screening for breast cancer doesn't start until 50 now. And to me, that's wrong. It should be 40 because there's so many women in their 40s who have cancer. But there's a national task force, and I always get the name wrong, the Canadian Task Force on Preventative Healthcare. So they issue guidelines to all the family doctors across Canada. They've just come out with new guidelines. And amazingly, screening starts at 50. They encourage... they tell women to not check their breasts. They tell doctors to not check the breasts of their patients. And there's no information in the guidelines about breast density. And these are the protocols that family doctors rely on for when they're recommending screening. So Dense Breast Canada is very opposed to these guidelines. And there is a federal election going on. And I'm going to be raising this with my candidates because these guidelines are wrong and they need to be changed.
Very good. So, and website is it a website you go to or?
Go to Dense Breast Canada. And actually there's a petition there. There's already 130 breast cancer doctors from across Canada who are opposed to these guidelines.
Okay.
There's thousands of signatures on the petition right now, but I would encourage anyone to go on to Dense Breast Canada website and to sign the petition and to raise this issue with your candidates. Mm. It's an independent task force, but it's overseen by the federal government. And they based it on obsolete evidence and studies, and really I think
it's outdated.
It needs to be updated. I cannot grapple that a task force they talk about shared decision making with the patient, but it's based on erroneous information. And I can't believe a task force would discourage a woman from checking her breasts. Because how else are you going to find your cancer?
Right.
Or discouraging your doctor from checking your breast.
Sense. Because a doctor would have some background knowledge on what things would feel like. Even if you were a woman who didn't feel comfortable checking your own breasts, then when you're going in for your regular pap tests, that would be something at least once a year that somebody who knows what they're doing would be checking.
Yes. There's no guidelines in my mind that should ever recommend against checking.
Oh my gosh.
Against checking your breasts.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't even make sense.
It's no. What you're saying is shocking.
I don't even know how to respond to it. I'm like, what?
It's shocking.
Yeah. To tell people to go against being an advocate for their own health.
Yes. They're saying, you know, if you want to check your breasts, go ahead. But they're not recommending that you do it regularly. And that's crazy to me.
That's leaves us speechless. Yeah, I know we are, but we're all up to date. Is there anything else that we should know about breast density or any other task force or things that people can do to help
to advocate for
change
for their own health?
Find out your breast density, talk to your doctor about it, and during the election campaign, talk to your candidates about these national guidelines because we need them changed. That this changing these guidelines will save lives.
Saving lives. Okay. Thank you again, Kathy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm Dana Lloyd.
And I'm Elaine Shannon. You've been listening to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast. You can connect with Dana at danalloydleadership.com, and you can connect with Elaine at elaineshannon.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And join us for more Soul Sister Conversations. Thanks for listening.